Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Tipsy Ghosts. We're your tipsy hosts, Sarah, and Lindsay.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
I wanted to tell you guys about a recent parenting fail that I had.
Okay. I want to hear it.
Okay.
I do. Please tell me.
Okay.
Look in my eyes.
It was time for Beckett to get new shoes.
The story
is called Beckett's New Shoes.
Okay. I want to hear about Beckett's new shoes.
Beckett and I decided to go get new shoes.
This is a fascinating story.
And we spent some time driving to the store. Once we were there, we walked around for what felt like eternity trying to find a pair of shoes. One thing about my son, he's very smart, but he just has no interest whatsoever in learning to tie his shoes. Could not care less. Okay.
Okay. My kids don't know how to tie their shoes either.
Right. So he says, why do I need to? All these shoes are slip-ons. And he's got a good point. But also, I'm like, kind of a life skill. We need to learn how to tie shoes here.
I agree.
Okay. So I didn't really press the issue because at this point, like, we're kind of in a hurry. And so he gets set on these Nikes that have laces. We buy the shoes, go home, and we work on learning to tie. We worked for a while. He learned how to tie. Mm-hmm. I go to work the next morning. My husband sends him to school in his new shoes that Beckett tied himself. Okay.
Okay.
Just pointing that out. That's not really an important part of the story. It's just exciting.
Yay, he learned it.
And then I get a call halfway through the day because I had accidentally bought him two right feet shoes and he went to school with them.
Like they were in the box like that? They're supposed to check.
Thank you.
The attendant is supposed to check to make sure they are the same size and that they are right on the lefty.
Don't worry. She made sure to tell the person that called her that. They usually check the boxes.
First thing I said, it was the counselor. I was like, oh my God, I feel like such an idiot. They usually check. Lessons were learned. Hey, check your boxes. They don't always check.
Did you take them back?
Yeah, we took them back. But I felt bad because he went to school all day.
And two right feet.
Especially knowing like him, like that would bother me.
Well,
like,
yeah, he finally went to the counselor's office and he was like, my feet hurt because I have two right shoes. I was like, oh my gosh,
no.
I'm an idiot.
You're not an idiot. That is the shoe store attendant's responsibility. Okay, lessons are learned.
Yeah.
Check your shoes before you buy them. And then also I need to teach my kids how to tie their shoes.
Well, would you guys like to hear a spooky tale?
Always.
Yes.
Let me take you to the beautiful state of Pennsylvania.
Wait, what kind of story are we doing here?
You tell me.
Paranormal.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now I can begin.
Yes, please.
Our first character, John James
Jingleheimer Smith.
Thank you.
His name was my name too.
Whenever we go out, the people always shout,
here goes
John Jacob Jingleheimer Smith.
That was him.
Yes. Okay. I'm there.
I feel like I didn't have a unique childhood. I think everybody had the same childhood.
Because we all know the same song?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, these are universal songs.
Well, his last name was not Jingleheimer or Schmidt.
Well, that is a missed opportunity for his parents.
It was Smurl.
It was what?
Smurl.
Is that what it is? I thought it was Jingleheimer Smith.
John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt. I think it's Schmidt.
Schmidt. I don't know. John now Jacob. I...
Oh, the phone. We're going to Google.
I have honestly never read...
If it's two of you, I feel like you're right.
John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt.
I had the English version.
Oh, look at that. We just shattered part of your childhood.
No.
You did have a different childhood. Oh,
thank you. I am unique. Jingleheimer is a Smith.
You thought after the name Jingleheimer, his name was just Smith?
Yeah, because the first part complicated, and so the second part's got to be normal. Jingleheimer Schmingleheimer would be really hard to say in a song.
Jingleheimer? Wait, Jingleheimer Schlingermeyer?
Schmingelmeimer.
Yes, my bad that I mispronounced that.
Obviously.
Schmidt. Smith. Oh. Blessings. Well, okay.
It was none of those. Interestingly enough.
What was his name?
John James. But he went by Jack.
Wait, his name wasn't even John Jacob. How did we get on this?
Because she said John James.
Okay. Okay, John James, and he went by Jack.
He went by Jack. His last name is Smurl.
Smurl.
Jingleheimer Smurl?
No, Smurl is a terrible last name. doesn't roll off the tongue. Smurl.
Is it Smurl or Schmurl?
Smurl.
Oh, Lord.
S-M-U-R-L. Now you've made it Schmurl.
Hi, Mr. Schmurl.
It's Smurl.
I'm pretty sure I win the red on that one. Mr. Schmurl.
Beautiful.
You gotta say it just like that, too.
Well, Jack.
Yeah, Jack. Let's Jack just call him Jack.
Was born December 19th, 1942 in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania to parents John and Mary. He had a fairly normal childhood and said that he would play in the woods regularly. He was described as smart, easygoing, and likable. Once he left his high school, he joined the Navy until 1965. And fun fact, during his time in the Navy, he trained as an ECT technician.
Ooh.
And he loved it.
What does ECT stand for?
Electroconvulsive therapy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You said thank you. What did you say? Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you for thanking me.
I'm kind of shocked that you had that job.
I just like that instead of you're welcome. You just said thank you.
God damn it, Lindsay. You didn't appreciate my joke.
I didn't hear it. I'm so sorry. I was focused on her thanking you.
For thanking her. I want to thank you for thanking me.
Oh, thank you.
We're just like, thank you. And she goes, thank you.
We're just so polite.
Okay. What was your joke? I'm so sorry.
I'm kind of shocked that he had that job.
I should have seen that coming because I know you. I'm crying. It's so insensitive.
Aww. You know what? If I was insensitive, you laughed really hard.
I like insensitive jokes.
Partly to blame.
I'm not mad about it.
Somebody will be.
I love a good psychology joke. All right, proceed.
Well, during Jack's time in the Navy, he met Janet. Well, Janet was still in high school, so.
Damn it, Janet.
Yeah. Jack and Janet, they hit it off immediately, and they dated for about a year, decided to go get married. They were blessed in the name department. Just kind of fun. Jack and Janet. Schmurl.
Jack and Janet Schmurl.
Went up a hill. Went up a hurl.
To fetch a pearl of water.
By the late 1960s, Jack and Janet had two daughters named Dawn and Heather. They were trying to live off one income so that Janet could be a stay-at-home mom, but decided it would be the best financial decision for them to move in with Jack's parents so that they could save some money. And again, Jack's parents are John and Mary, in case you don't remember.
John and Mary and Janet and Jack.
That's right.
Lots of names here,
Dawn and Heather. So, unfortunately, in 1972, Hurricane Agnes, which doesn't sound very ferocious.
Oh, it's Agnes. She's like beating down the door.
She quilts and has cats.
She did not quilt very nice things at this time. She fucked some shit up all along the coast.
Oh, no.
She was mad. She's a mad old lady is what it sounds like. So the Smurl family's home didn't have much damage, but the city seized the house through eminent domain. And because I'm a five, you know, I had to look up definition and make sure that I knew. This refers to the power of the government to take ownership of private property and convert it to public use. So they could turn it into a hospital or something that everybody needed to use.
Can they still do that? I'm sorry.
Yes, they can.
So they can just come and take our homes.
If like a catastrophe happens and like your home is in good shape, then they might
just like randomly come up and say, hey, I want to put a quick trip right where your house is. It's mine now.
There probably are some caveats. It didn't outwardly define that, okay. Which is kind of scary that they could just go in and take some stuff over.
The government kind of makes its own rules anyway.
For sure. For example, Sour Castle, I was watching a video about it the other day, and one of the previous owners from like not that long ago was trying to knock down some of the properties that are close because there's a bunch of houses next to it now and take them over through eminent domain.
Yeah.
And knock them down and make everything into like a big bed and breakfast.
Oh.
Like for their own benefit.
Interesting. Mm.
So I am not really sure how that works, but okay. That's what they did.
It's a little scary.
It is. So now the family was forced to leave their fine home and find a new home.
Because basically the government was like, this is now a hospital.
Sorry, you got to get out. We're going to take it over.
Jeez.
Not even sure what they converted it to. They just took it over.
Okay. Wow. That is the real scary part of this story.
And that wasn't that long ago. That was in the 70s.
Yeah.
So the Smurl family, they find a duplex at 330 Chase Street in the small town of West Pittston. It's spelled P-I-T-T-S-T-O-N. So I would feel like that's Pittston, but everybody says it like Pittston, I think. So forgive me. But fun fact, this town is about 30 minutes away from Scranton.
Nice. I know where that is.
I love a good Scranton.
I know. So we don't know much history about the house itself, except for that it was built in 1896 and that the previous owner was an elderly man who had rented the house out for several years. And I'm not exactly sure why the Smurl family didn't raise an eyebrow when they bought the duplex because it was sold to them for $18,000, which is only $50,000 today.
That is very cheap.
It's pretty cheap, even like by today's standards, to buy a duplex for $50,000. Jack, Janet, and their daughters would live on one side of the duplex, and then Mary and John would live on the other. It was going to be perfect.
I get it.
In January 1974, just a few months after they moved into the house, the first bizarre encounter happened to them.
We're getting to the spooky part. I'm excited.
Mary, she had bought a brand new carpet for her brand new house. And when she rolled it out, she noticed a giant stain in the middle of the carpet. Which she thought was weird. Okay. Uh-oh. So she works on it. She gets the stain out and it looks
she didn't
perfect.
Return it?
She did not.
It's a dead body.
They sold her a used carpet.
Probably, but I don't know. I don't know why she didn't return it. But she worked really hard and got the stain out and thought it was perfect.
Good for her.
But then the stain returned several days later in the same spot as if it was never even gone to begin with.
Spooky spot.
So they throw it away.
Good. That's what they should have done.
And they were like, meh, I don't know what the problem is, but something is not right here. Shortly after the rug incident, Jack said he was watching TV when suddenly the TV burst into flames.
Sorry, what?
Was he watching like magic shows?
I don't know what he was watching.
Which shows?
But they did make it a point to say it was a new TV.
That seems like another thing he should take back and get his money back.
Thank you. These people don't value
They didn't
money.
Talk to each other. So it was John. Maybe he was like, and then Jack's TV.
You sold
just
me
anything to tell each other.
A faulty TV that just randomly burst into flames. I'm going to be talking to somebody's manager.
Also, my mom had some really terrible carpet sold to her.
Can you take care of that?
What is happening? What is your value in customer service?
This department store sucks. Aisle 9, we got the carpet. Section 23, we got the TV, and they're both terrible.
They were terrible. And I have bad news because there are more terrible things.
Sears.
It might have been Sears. I worked there for a while.
In the men's department.
In the men's department. Thank you.
I remember that.
So Jack kind of just chalked it up to faulty wiring. And he said, you know, I wasn't really much of a handyman, and I was responsible for doing a lot of this. You know, hooking the TV up, but
you plug it into the wall.
Well, you know,
it
they
might
had
have been
to
more
put
complicated
those cables
back, then. Yes.
Back in there. I don't know.
The red, yellow, white. Yeah.
You had to change the tubes out, right?
Yeah. I don't know if he had to do that or
back
not.
Back in the 70s, the TVs were probably more complicated. I can understand that. Okay.
But they did say that, you know, the house had passed all their inspections. So that was kind of weird that that happened. But soon after the TV fire, their new electric stove caught fire.
What?
And then Jack's brand new car. Caught fire.
His car caught fire?
Yes.
In the driveway?
Yes.
What?
Not the driveway.
The accent.
It's
my bad.
Shock that the entire house did not burn down, to be honest with you.
Listen, if you've had three things catch fire, skip going back to the manager at Sears. Go to the priest.
Yeah. The electric stove probably also came from Sears. I'm just saying.
You know what? I don't think it's Sears' fault. I think it's spontaneous combustion.
I don't think Sears sells cars, though.
They might have.
I don't know what they sold in the 70s. So even though they thought these things were kind of weird, they just assumed again that these are probably maybe just because they're new homeowners and they just had really bad luck.
Yeah, yeah. That's bad luck.
They installed a new bathtub and said shortly after they installed it, it looked like
it caught on fire.
No fire this time. It too caught on fire.
If that caught on fire, I would be.
I know.
I think it's time to move.
Yeah.
Cut our losses.
Well, it wasn't caught on fire, but it did look like it had been scratched by, quote, the talons of a frenzied beast.
Which of our friends do we think it was? Was it Krampus?
It's Jeff.
Was it Goatman?
Jeff the Mongoose. He lives in the walls.
Was it Jeff the Mongoose?
It's a Kraken.
Kraken. Came up through the drain with his squid-like tentacles and scratched something.
He's got sharp claws under there.
So something scratched this tub.
Yeah, the tub didn't look right. And it was brand new. They had just installed it.
I'd be pissed.
1975, the oldest daughter, Dawn, would regularly come into her parents' room, almost nightly, and said that she was seeing people floating around her room.
Absolutely not.
Her parents would try to go check things out, but they never saw the floating people. But they did begin experiencing more and more minor things that were kind of weird, but they would always try to explain them away. Things like noises, radios turning on and off by themselves, drawers opening and closing by themselves, footsteps up and down the hallway, toilets flushing on their own, and empty porch chairs rocking and creaking on their own.
Listen, The Sixth Sense gave me a fear of cabinets opening and closing on their own. Absolutely not.
That's a no for you?
That's a no.
You're moving out?
You remember that scene in The Sixth Sense where all the cabinets are closed and then it goes away and then it pans back and they're all open again? Yes. Terrifying.
Yes. That was scary.
Open cabinets are terrifying.
Like somebody opening all your cabinets when you leave the room and you come back and all the cabinet doors are wide open and the drawers are open.
If it's a stranger, yeah. If it's a ghost, no. Thank you. I needed to look in there and see what I needed.
Thank you for showing everyone my plates.
This is really inconvenient.
You're right. I do need to clean that out.
I think you're pointing this out.
Winston needs a friendly ghost, too.
I do. I need a ghost guide. That's what I need. I'll wake up in the morning and can point to what I need to work on. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it doesn't point on myself. And we're good.
Look inward.
I'll do it.
It's a philosophical ghost.
Today's the day you need to look back.
It's just going to keep showing you a mirror. Everywhere you go, there's a mirror.
You'd be like, I don't know why it keeps showing me this mirror. Yeah.
All right, so they're being haunted by some kind of poltergeist.
It's starting, things are starting to be kind of weird in there. 1977, Janet gives birth to twin girls.
Okay, Stephanie.
Okay.
And Juliet.
Okay.
Karen.
There's
honestly,
only two.
You're very close. It's Shannon and Karen.
And Karen.
Yes. So the house is pretty busy, as you can imagine, because now there's four children in the home. And for several years, they didn't really seem to notice anything going on at all. But in 1983, that changed.
Oh my gosh, they're still there.
They're still there. And then
they won't return a piece of carpet. You think they're just going to abandon the house?
Because of a few cabinets? No.
And because our new tub has claw marks on it?
Absolutely not. We will stay here.
It must have been our non-existent cat.
Well, in 1983, they started noticing a, quote, stench of smoke and rotten meat.
Sulfur.
That seemed to permeate the house no matter what.
Sulfur. It's a demon.
They could not get rid of this smell. They thought maybe the smell was caused by something local. There was some local mines and something happens where they stir up the air underneath the ground, like probably sulfur, what you're saying. So they explained it away. And then Jack went ahead and reached out to the Department for Local Mines and said that, and the person there said that, no, there's no way that that could be happening. We're not even doing that stuff right now. So anyways, I don't know. I don't know. It could have been the mines. It could have been sulfur.
Okay.
Sounds like Satan.
Could have been Satan.
Sounds like a portal to hell. But what do I know?
After a while, they stopped coming up with rationalizations and just accepted the fact that I think our house is haunted.
I think our house is just going to smell like rotten eggs.
It's stinky.
Sorry.
In 1985, the house was often very cold. John and Mary, mom and dad next door, or would hear loud, obscene, and abusive language coming from Jack and Janet's side of the duplex when they weren't arguing, and sometimes they weren't even home when this was happening.
Oh my gosh, okay, wait. You're hearing voices when there's nobody home.
Yeah.
And you're just fine. Like, it might be haunted, I don't know.
I think it's time we just, it's haunted. It is what it is.
It is.
That's what they were thinking. In late 1985, Janet was in the basement doing some laundry when she heard someone call her name. She paused, and then she heard a female voice say her name again. When she turned around to see who it was, no one was there, and Janet, of course, was freaking out. She heard it again, and then she screamed out, "What do you want from me?" And then she proceeded to walk up the stairs backwards. I think it's because she was looking down in the basement.
Oh, you didn't want to... That is a legit fear. You don't want to like go up the stairs and have your back to whatever's down there.
Moonwalk up the stairs.
Well, the first time I heard it, I pictured it because they didn't say walk. They said went up the stairs backwards. And I was picturing
you pictured like, exorcist. Yes.
In reverse. Yeah.
No, which is awesome. Bent over and crab walked up the
stairs. You either walk up backwards so you don't turn your back or you run up the stairs. It's a legit fear.
I mean, I get it too. So anyhow, when she got to the top of the stairs, she heard her name again, and this freaked her out so bad that she fell to her knees and began praying immediately. February 1986, one morning after Janet had gotten the kids to school, she was ironing in the kitchen and said that she felt a sudden cold rush of air into the room. She looked up and saw a, quote, black human-shaped form about 10 feet away. She later said, "To be honest, I wasn't sure at first if it even existed. I knew that there was a possibility that I was hallucinating or something, but then it started moving towards me, and I knew then and there, there was no doubt about it, the thing, whatever it was real." She said that this thing had no facial features, and that eventually, when she was staring at it for a few minutes, a cape grew from its back.
It's a... super spooky guy.
Super spooky.
I'm super spooky.
With no facial features.
Or
no
a vampire.
Ooh. Or I like that better.
Could be.
Unfortunately for the Smurls, things got worse.
Well, of course, because if you haven't decided at this point, it's time to leave. They're never leaving.
Progressively gets worse for them, unfortunately. On the night that Heather was to be confirmed at the church, a large ceiling light crashed down onto their daughter, Shannon, which nearly killed her.
Oh my gosh. It nearly killed the girl.
But it didn't.
It didn't. This is a good scare.
I don't know. I just pictured this random person just like minding their own business. Yes. And
I'm picturing like how like a chandelier, like in movies, would fall.
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry, Shannon.
But she's okay, I think. They also said that Jack levitated. I'm not sure if they said at the same time, because that would be really funny.
I'm sorry, what? He levitated. He levitated. Light. It is time to get out. It is time to leave the house. Time to go.
As he rises, the light falls on Shannon.
If anybody in my family ever levitated, I'm like, yeah, it's time to go. There's no explaining that. No, we need to go.
You're on your own, kid.
Yeah.
They hung around far too long, in my opinion.
If you hit levitation, you have been there too long.
Well, in June of that year.
Oh my gosh, they're still there.
Oh yeah, they're still there. Janet was yanked out of her bed. And at this time, Jack began...
That's not funny.
Gagging.
It's not funny.
No, I'm laughing because why are they still there?
They're still there.
And yeah. Weren't you laughing after Janet was yanked out of her bed?
Because why are you still there? Get out of the house.
You know, at this point, yeah. I don't know why they're still there. They've had plenty of red flags here. Well, she was yanked out of bed and Jack began gagging from a disgusting smell that took over the room.
Oh my gosh.
I just picture a cat gagging.
He's coughing up a hairball. His wife is being dragged by some unseen force and he's just like, excuse me, I got something in my throat.
It smells like shit in here.
I can't help you, honey. The smell is so bad that I literally cannot even.
Did you fart, Janet?
Janet, where are you going?
It was like a fart transplant.
You don't fart and just leave the room.
Janet, Dutch ovened the shit out of that bed.
Janet, not again. Change your pants.
I'm so sorry, Janet. That must have been horrifying. Okay.
All right.
So this is going on.
Yeah, that sounds unfortunate. They probably explained that one away, though. I don't know.
Yeah. Let's just explain Janet being dragged out of bed.
Janet's got some bowel problems.
I mean, I levitated. She's dragged out of bed. What can you do?
It literally scared the shit out of her.
Damn it, Janet.
In the bed. Well, they began hearing scratching noises coming.
Jeff the mongoose.
And breathing coming from within the walls.
It's Jeff.
It's Jeff. They heard snakes hissing.
Absolutely not. Get out.
No, here's what happened. It's Jeff. Hey, guys.
It's me. I had to put an S on the end of that. I think I killed Boydston.
Is this Star Wars?
It's me. He's Jar Jar Binks. Jeff the Mongoose. He's a cousin of Jar Jar Binks.
Misa Thinka.
It's Misa. Jeff Simon's goose. Okay, but no, seriously, if there are snakes missing in my walls, it doesn't have to be demonic or spirit or like possession. If there are snakes in the walls, you are getting out of that house.
Hang on, what if it's parcel tongue?
Getting out
Maybe
of the house.
That's what it was.
Yeah, who sneaks parcel tongue?
Harry Potter.
I know, but Voldemort spoke it first. Not first, but like.
But Harry Potter.
Yeah, it's not a good thing to speak
Do
parcel
think
tongue.
Harry Potter's in the walls.
You know what though? He freed that snake in the first movie.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that was a good idea. He freed a giant snake in the zoo where there are people. Not a good idea, Harry.
Survival of the fittest.
Gosh.
So it could have been snakes in the walls. It may have been Harry Potter.
Or
it might
back.
Have been Voldemort. I don't know.
Either way, no. Get out.
They all sound not great. There were also footsteps running through the duplex. And then not only was Shannon pulled out of her bed and down the stairs, the bedspreads were becoming just turning up shredded, and footsteps were heard in the attic.
No. This house is so haunted.
It was then.
Sounds fun.
That Janet finally decided that they needed some help and reached out to everyone's favorite paranormal couple, Ed and Lorraine Warren.
The Warrens. You know, I was wondering because we're in Connecticut. This is their timeline. I was wondering.
We are in Pennsylvania, but yeah.
But they were like Connecticut, weren't they? So like around that area?
Yeah, well, I guess so. Well, they agreed to come to the house, and they brought Rosemary Frew. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. F-R-U-E-H.
I don't know who that is.
Well, let me tell you. Okay. She was a registered nurse and a psychic.
Oh.
They spoke with the family and asked them several questions about their religion, how they got along, and if they had any involvement with the occult. Basically, just trying to feel them out and see if there was any problems at home that might be causing these issues. The Smurls were adamant that they did nothing to invite any supernatural forces into their home. After investigating the home, the Warrens and Rosemary determined that there were four evil spirits. Three of them were not really a problem, but the fourth was a demon, of course.
I knew it.
Since the Smurls had not done anything to invite this demon into their home, the Warrens decided that the demon had probably been dormant for several decades and had risen because of the emotional energy from the girls that were going through puberty in the house.
I'm sorry.
So,
hold on.
Demons are like the chicken pox. virus that
you
can just
need to watch
dormant.
Out for your household, because apparently puberty can trigger a demon.
Yep, all those people out there who have girls going through puberty, watch out.
Puberty,
you might summon a demon.
Yep,
you need an exorcism.
The Warrens tried to get the demon to react, mostly through some form of religious provocation, and the demon responded by shaking the mirrors and opening the drawers and then spelling out, "You filthy bastard, get out of this house."
That's
a long sentence.
Big phrase. I wonder how they spelled it out. The TV? Ouija board?
SpaghettiOs.
Like, what did they do? Like the letter blocks on the refrigerator?
The TV also seemed to have an eerie glow that only went away with prayer and holy water.
It's like poltergeist.
Mm-hmm. Things didn't get better.
Of course not. Nothing is getting better here.
The family claimed that they were hearing now pig sounds coming from the walls. and that now Jack and Janet had been slapped, bitten, and viciously tickled.
And had a big craving for bacon.
Okay. You've got snakes in your walls.
Hold on. You skipped over viciously tickled.
You've got pigs in your walls. And what is viciously tickled? That was my third question.
Honestly, though, I get it. I'm super ticklish. And whenever I get tickled too hard, it's like, it's too much.
That sounds vicious. Mm-hmm. I just have never heard anybody describe it as that. Jack claimed now to have been attacked by a succubus.
Oh, no, Jack.
That appeared as a young woman, but was actually a very, very old woman.
Oh, gross. All of this is so, so bad.
Also, Janet now has said that she has also been attacked by an incubus.
Oh, okay. Both of them. Got it. Great. Okay.
The Smurls decided to get some help from the church and called in Bishop Robert McKenna, but this only made the demon more mad. Now the children were experiencing physical attacks from the entity, and Ed Warren felt that the entire family was in the second demonic stage, which is oppression. Things are not looking good.
They're only in the second stage.
In August of 1986, the family decided to do an interview with the local newspaper, which created public interest in the house and what was supposedly going on inside of the home. Paul Kurtz, the chairman of the Committee for the Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal, and okay. He asked to investigate the home, but he was denied because the family felt that the committee had already decided that the story was fake and they wouldn't believe him.
Oh, okay.
Paul later wrote an opinion article and suggested that there were natural explanations for what the family was experiencing. He also pointed out that there was no police record of Mrs. Smurl making a complaint, even though she claimed to have done so on several occasions. Paul also thought that one of the main motivators for the so-called haunting was probably to get a movie contract and make some money, which, spoiler alert, that does happen for them.
Mm.
Ed Warren called a press conference and stated that he recorded some quote-unquote paranormal sounds that sounded like groaning and grunting.
No, don't go there.
Let your mind think what you want. And he also said to have captured a video of a dark shadow moving through the house. And when asked if he could show these recordings, he said he couldn't because he'd given them away to the church, which the church denied having. So either
interesting,
Ed's lying or the church is covering.
Or both.
Or both. The Smurls contacted another medium named Mary Alice Rinkman, who examined the house and said that there were four spirits in the home. So kind of reiterating what Ed and Lorraine had already said, the spirits were a confused old woman named Abigail, a man with a mustache, and his name was Patrick. Patrick had murdered his wife and her lover and then was hanged by a mob.
Ew.
She could not identify the third spirit and said that the fourth spirit was a powerful demon. So there you go. So Bishop McKenna, he comes back for a third time and performed an exorcism in the house. And this time it seemed to have worked for about 3 months. Jack said then he started seeing the black form again, the black misty form again, hearing noises from the walls. There's terrible smells in the house. And then the physical violence started again.
Jeez.
They finally decided to move out of the home.
Oh my gosh. And moved
to another town completely.
Finally. About time.
A town without a Sears.
They didn't even say.
Get away from Sears.
The family themselves had to have one more final exorcism by the church in 1989, and then finally they felt that they were at peace. After this whole ordeal, they wrote a book called The Haunted, which was released in 1988, and there was a made-for-TV movie called The Haunted, and it was released in 1991.
I don't think I've seen it.
I didn't have a chance to watch it, but I will.
Okay.
That is the Smurl Haunting.
I have never heard of that one of the Warrens.
I didn't either, and it sounds like kind of a big one, so I don't know how I missed that one for so long.
I mean, yeah, it sounds like one of the ones that could have been in the Conjuring universe.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys, thanks so much for tuning in this week to our paranormal episode. You can always find us at thetipsyghost.com with our socials linked from there, or send us an email at thetipsyghost@gmail.com.
Please give us a 5-star rating and a great review anywhere you listen to podcasts. We really appreciate it, and it really does help.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. We'll catch you guys next week.
Okay, bye.
Bye.